It's a Saturday evening at Abaigiri, 3rd of May, 2025. Days and nights are relentlessly passing. How well am I spending my time? We chanted that this morning with the morning puja, morning chanting. So soon there's going to be this. The plan is there's going to be a visit from some Kruba Ajans from Thailand, Longpa Liam and others. That's the plan. They don't have necessarily all have their visas yet. So in the West, we like to plan and make announcements about things, but there always has to be that caveat that it's, as we say in Thai, it's mai nè non. This is the uncertain. It's uncertain. It's always uncertain. So we can have a plan in our Google calendar or our whatever calendar we use. We can have all sorts of plans and things that we think we're going to be doing, but it is uncertain. And the future is always uncertain, how we're going to be in the future. And even tomorrow is uncertain. And that's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing that things are completely uncertain. It's just something we need to realize for ourselves, that the extent to which we realize uncertainty is the extent to which our mind will be at ease. And so Longpo Cha, one of the famous Longpo Cha quotes, where he talks about the four stages of awakening of Sotapanna, stream entry, Sakadagami, the once returner, the Anagami, the non-returner, and the Arahant, or the fully awakened being. He would speak about those four stages of awakening. And he would say that for a stream enterer, things are uncertain. For a once returner, things are really uncertain. For a non-returner, things are really, really uncertain. And for an arhant, things are completely uncertain. So it's those different realizations of the truth of uncertainty. How truly do we see it? How much do we live according to that truth of uncertainty? Because when everything is completely uncertain, then there's a complete letting go. Not in a bad way, just, oh, well, you know, it's all uncertain, so just might as well just not care about anything. Oh, it's not that. It's all letting go with wisdom. Letting go with wisdom, because the wisdom is that which sees uncertainty. And say, then we can act with wisdom and discernment in the moment, whatever comes up. We can deal with it with clarity and mindfulness, not coming from a sense of, but I was going to do this, but I was going to do that. That was my plan. So this is what happens when we do this practice called Tudong, where it's monastic wandering. Since the time of the Buddha, the peripatetic monks would go off on wandering and live on their own, because we don't actually have to depend on monasteries. As bhikkhus, we keep our precepts. That's all we need. The precepts are our monastery that creates our monastery wherever we go. Of course, living with the Sangha is important and necessary. And according to our rules, we have to live with a teacher for our first 5 years of our monastic life. Even if one was to attain some noble attainment, some form of insight or awakening, a stage of awakening during that first 5 years, you still need to live with a teacher. But actually, for somebody who attained a stage of awakening, it's not going to be a problem for them to live with a teacher. It's only problematic for those who aren't awakened. Those are the ones who have trouble living with teachers, because they're going to maybe point out our hidden faults that we don't want to see. So, but then that it's in our rules in the Vinaya, the first 5 years, it's called Nisaya or Nisai, and means dependence. And actually the word Nisai in Thai has changed over time. Now it means like personality or kind of our character. So when we say somebody is Nisai D, it means they've got good character, they're a good person. So there's that first 5 years of dependence, but then after that, if we have developed some sort of wisdom and discernment and we are competent in the rules and the monastic life, then we would have the opportunity to do this practice of Tudong. And also the rule at Wat Pa Pong is that, I'm not sure if this is the rule now, but at the time of Longpo Cha, that if a monk wanted to go Tudong, if he's under 10 vasas, then he would have to go with somebody who's 10 or more, if he's never been Tudong before. Just to learn the ropes. This is what we call the Tutanga Ajahn. There's an Ajahn, there's a teacher for every aspect of our life. So I was recollecting a bit Ajahn Kurudamo, who came back today much sooner than expected, having completed his mitral valve heart surgery, which was kind of a serious surgery. And he was discharged from the hospital, was able to make it back to the monastery today, so he's resting now. But I always think that with gratitude that Ajahn Kurudamo is my sewing Ajahn. He's the one who taught me sewing. So the one who taught us sewing is our sewing Ajahn. The one who teaches us how to go alms round is our alms round Ajahn. So we might have many, many Ajahns. The word Ajahn in Thai comes from the Pali Acharya. So coming back to this idea, what I'm getting to is uncertainty. Uncertainty is something that gets highlighted when we're able to do this practice of Tudong. And if you go Tudong and you have a plan, I'm going to meet up with this person at this time, I'm going to go to this place at this time, and there's a very set plan, and there's no real room for things to happen and for that plan to shift and change. There's no real room for things to happen that are unexpected that might change the direction of our trajectory on the Tudong. So if there's a set plan, it's very concrete. That's a great way to make your Tudong into hell. But if you want your Tudong to be heaven, then you let the generosity guide the direction of the Tudong. You let the generosity guide the direction. So you might have a plan. We're going to go this way. We're going to go this route. We're going to walk in this way. We're going to go to this place, that place. If it's two monks, you might be collaborating together to go this place or that place and maybe try to get to a certain destination more or less at a certain time. But then within that, things happen and you shift the trajectory, you shift the course based on the uncertainty. So you might think, okay, well, tomorrow we're going to maybe make it to this place. Then you might meet up with somebody or get an offering to stay somewhere that isn't yet at that place. You're not at that pre-planned destination, but then if you get an offering to stay somewhere, then you go with that, you go with the generosity, and then you end up meeting people you might otherwise never meet, people who might never come to the monastery, and there's that sense of mutual learning, mutual assistance. And we go Tudong not to proselytize, not to spread the good word, not to spread the Dhamma necessarily, but to learn. It's our own path of learning. It's our own practice. Of course, we do end up spreading the Dhamma in a sense because we are out and about as a sign of the Samana out in society. And that can be inspiring for people. It can inspire confidence in the hearts of people. But we're really going for our own learning, our own practice. And then when we talk with people and exchange ideas, we can actually learn from them. They might have a sort of practice that might be helpful for us. They might have ideas that we hadn't thought of. So there's this sense of mutual assistance, mutual learning, and we get supported on Tudong. People will support us, and we go with that. We go with generosity. So if we're able to be okay with uncertainty, and then each day it becomes much more magical, and really it can be very amazing, to the point of being wonderful, feeling like one is held by some sort of wonderful, mysterious Dhamma force that is guiding and holding one. And so to be okay with uncertainty, that's a necessity, that's a prerequisite. And in the few times I've gone Tudong in the West, I haven't done any really long Tudongs, but more kind of medium and shorter length Tudongs in America, in these times that I've had the opportunity to do this, then seeing that when there is that sense of being okay with uncertainty, then things do end up going well. And then the moment there would be this kind of concrete or firm plan, things would stop going well for a while until we realized, oh yeah, we have to be okay with uncertainty, and things would start to go well again. So if we step aside, don't insert our own ideas into the plan, into whatever is happening, and just allow ourselves to be guided by the generosity of others, then it becomes something that's beneficial for ourselves and beneficial for others. And the reason I touch on this is because this is the attitude we can have all the time. We can train ourselves to actually have this attitude all the time, that when we are okay with uncertainty, or we start to have an insight or a realization into the uncertain nature of all phenomena, the uncertain nature of life, of our day-to-day life, then it's the tudong of life. So each day we don't really know what's going to happen. So in the monastery, this type of uncertainty isn't so highlighted because we're pretty sure we're going to get a meal, almost 100% sure we're going to have a meal these days, quite good meals on a daily basis. And we have a place to stay, a place to sleep. It's more or less sure. So then that truth of uncertainty gets veiled. But if we hold it in the way that our dwelling is just a dwelling for a day and a night, it doesn't belong to us. So I have my kuti, and I've got my possessions in my kuti, but it doesn't actually belong to me. It's just a dwelling for a day and a night. And then there's a sense of freedom in that, and we could really dwell anywhere. And the food that we eat, it's just the food just for today. We don't really know what or where we're going to eat tomorrow. There's a sense that maybe, yeah, okay, I'm pretty sure I'll be here in the monastery tomorrow and eating here tomorrow, but it's not really for sure. It's not really for sure. There is that sense of uncertainty. So when we're okay with uncertainty, when we start to have insight into uncertainty, then when things happen and things change, there's no resistance. We're able to easily flow into any situation, and that's the mind like water. So the Buddha talks about the mind like stone, mind like dirt, mind like water. When I have a mind like water that can flow into any situation. The mind like stone, when some unfavorable situation arises, say we get criticized or hear something we don't want to hear, then the mind likes, if we have a mind like stone, it's like making an etch in a stone, and that line, that etch in the stone stays there for a very long time. It stays there for a very long time. So the effect of the unpleasantness that we may have come into contact with stays with us for a very long time. We might bear a grudge against somebody, for example, for a very long time. Mind like dirt, it's like making a line in the dirt with a stick. So the line in the dirt will stay there for a while, but through over time it might rain, or the wind will blow the dust over that line and that line will disappear. So it'll be there for a medium period of time. So that's like we're able to let go of things after a period of time. And so if we come to contact with some sort of unpleasantness, or even getting intoxicated by some sort of pleasantness, then we're able to drop that over a period of time, but it'll take a little bit of time to get to that, to get there, to be able to drop that thing. And then the mind like water, it's like drawing a line in water. It disappears as you're drawing it. So the line disappears as you're drawing it. So as the unpleasantness is happening, the mind is actively letting go of it because it sees the uncertain nature of it. Or as the pleasantness, as the happiness is happening, the mind is just not clinging to it because it sees the impermanent, uncertain nature of that. And speaking of happiness, you know, happiness is a very interesting thing, because the Buddha talked about these different types of dukkha or suffering that we can experience. And there's dukkha-dukkha. So I could say, like, I'm experiencing, you know, say, sciatic nerve pain. So that's dukkha-dukkha. That's just the dukkha of just painful sensation. So it's not that bad. It's getting much better, but there is that sensation there. So that's dukkha-dukkha. That's the dukkha of dukkha. So it's just plain old dukkha. And then you have viparinama dukkha. That's the dukkha inherent in the conditioned world, which is change. So things change, and there can be a sense that things aren't quite right, because no matter what we do, it's always changing. No matter what we put in place, it's always changing, and it's always turning into something else. So there's that tension or that anxiety around this term we call viparinama dukkha. And then there's another one called sukha dukkha. So that's the dukkha of happiness. And that's an interesting one to look at, because sukha dukkha, we might experience genuine happiness. So we might experience genuine happiness and well-being. But then, and it's partly coupled with insight, we know that happiness is going to change. That inherent wisdom inside of us, that inherent discernment, knows that the happiness is going to change. And so we can't be truly happy. We can't be truly happy, because we know that that happiness that we're experiencing is not going to last. So there's that underlying anxiety, or that underlying sense that things still aren't quite right, aren't quite perfect, that underlies any happiness that we experience. Because we know, oh, it's going to change. And then if there's any clinging to it at all, then there's a sense of dissatisfaction bound up with it. So that's sukha dukkha. So this is the nature of things. If the mind picks things up, if we aren't yet to that point where the mind is like water and able to flow into any situation and able to let go of any situation without clinging to it, able to let go of suffering without clinging to it, able to let go of happiness without clinging to it. So like most of us are in this boat, we aren't there yet. So we have to look at that. Where is the mind clinging? How is the mind picking things up? Things are going to come to test us each day. So the body changes. We might experience pain in the body. That's coming to test us each day. How is the mind going to pick that up? And in what way is the mind going to pick it up? In what way is the mind going to suffer over it? People might come to test us. So people might come to complain that we've acted in a way that was inappropriate and we may disagree with them. But how is that going to affect us? How is that going to affect the clinging? And we might get tested by external situations in society. So when we hear about things happening in society, how does that affect the clinging? How does that affect the mind? How do we pick that up? How are we holding it? Are we suffering over it? Are we allowing our anxiety to increase over things happening in society? So just looking at, this is one part of mindfulness. Mindfulness is that checking in with ourselves and looking at, how is the mind? How is the clinging? How are we picking things up? How are we relating to things? And letting go, when we talk about letting go is skillful reflection. And it's letting go with discernment. It's a wise response. So we can't just drop things and go into nothing. If we're going to drop one thing, we're going to pick something else back up. But letting go could be thought of as skillful response. Skillful response being a response of not picking things up, non-clinging. So there's the level of letting go. We're holding on to something. We see that we're holding on to it. And then we drop it because we see, oh yeah, letting go of that. If I'm holding on, it's going to burn me. If I let go, there's going to be coolness and ease and well-being. And so, for example, if we're holding a grudge against somebody, say we hold a grudge, somebody maybe did something to us in the past. I've actually talked to people who still have a grudge against somebody who did something to them 30 or 40 years ago, and they can't even remember what they did to them. But all I remember is I'm supposed to have a grudge against this person. Can't even remember what they did, but the anger is still there, the grudge is. And that's an instance where sometimes we can feel that's where the sense of self comes in, because that's where we feel, well, I can't let go of it because I've been holding on to it for so long. I'm only holding on to this by virtue of the fact that I've been holding on to it for so long already. So, you know, if I was to let go of that now, or say acknowledge that this thing that I'm holding on to is causing me suffering, if I'm to acknowledge that now, what does that say about me for the last 40 years? Does it say, you know, I'm foolish for holding on to this for 40 years or whatever? So, you know, there can be that sense of, oh no, I'm going to hold on to this just by virtue of the fact that I've been holding on to this for so long already. But it will do us well. We'll do ourselves a favor by just dropping things that have been burning us. But it takes courage. It takes a sense of courage and humility. So we're going to have to say, oh, well, yeah, I just made a mistake. Just made a mistake there. I was causing myself some suffering, and I can let go of that. I can do this. And it's going to be light. It's going to be light. It's going to be a sense of well-being and ease. But it's difficult because we might not yet be okay with uncertainty. So if we're not yet okay with uncertainty, then yes, letting go of our old grudges and habits and whatever, letting go of those things, we can actually see that it'll bring us happiness, but it's the unknown. We don't know what that's like yet. If we haven't let go yet, we don't know what that's like. And yes, we are suffering now. We're in agony, maybe even now, but at least it's the known. At least we know what it's going to be like. So there can be that sense of not wanting to go into the unknown, but that's what Tudong is. Tudong is going into the unknown. That willingness to go into that which we have no idea what's going to happen. And really, that's just the thing. That's the crux of the whole matter, is that we, none of us know what's going to happen. That's the truth of the way things are. But there's a false sense of security when we have the Google Calendar. This is happening tomorrow. This is happening the day after tomorrow. This is happening next week. This is happening next month. So there can be a false sense of security in that. But actually, we have no idea what's going to happen. So when we're more okay with that, a lot of the practice is just becoming okay with that, becoming more okay with uncertainty, and say, okay, well, I'm going to try to let this thing go, and it's okay, and just going to see what happens. And that's when learning happens too. When we're able to go into the unknown, then that's when learning happens. And it might be difficult. It might be something that ends up causing us more suffering. We don't know yet, but just to have that courage to try it out. Letting go, what the Buddha talked about, letting go of clinging, letting go of anger. And that's, the Buddha just says, try it out. And the Buddha isn't like a police officer who's going to beat us with a baton if we do something wrong. That's not at all how the Buddha is. And I know for myself, a lot of us starting out will relate to the Buddha in that way. Like, you got to do everything right or else you're going to get slapped. You're going to get hit with the ruler. So, and I remember Reverend Hung Shur giving a talk one time that he said, he thought he used to relate to the Buddha as like a police officer. And when Master Xuan Hua came up to him one day, and I think it was after Reverend Hung Shur had been a monk for about 10 years, and Master Hua said, you're not relating to the Buddha in the right way. You don't understand the Buddha. He said, you think the Buddha is like a police officer who's going to blow a whistle or hit you with a baton the moment you mess up, the moment you do something wrong in the monastery. But really, the Buddha is like the best friend you ever had, who just compassionately wants to see you stop suffering. That's the Buddha. So the Buddha doesn't really care about being an authoritarian figure and making us fall into line. That's not the Buddha's intention. The Buddha is the best friend we've ever had. And the Buddha wants us to have that insight into uncertainty, because that's the best friend will want the best things for us. So that's where the Buddha said how people should relate to him as a Kalyanamitta. Kalyanamitta means beautiful friend or wise friend, spiritual friend. That he said that's how people should view him. He didn't say that he should be seen as an avatar or a guru, even though he was the ultimate guru. He was the ultimate teacher. But he just said people should see him as a great friend, because he just wants what's good for us. And it's up to us. So the Buddha's teachings, it's all about, well, if you want to suffer, you can do this. If you want to be happy and have a sense of well-being, you can do this, but it's up to you. So if you want well-being and happiness, here's these 5 precepts, here's these 8 precepts, and so on. And try it out. If you want well-being and happiness, then let go of anger, let go of greed, be more humble, and try it out. Try it out. Is it true or not? Be generous. Have a sense of composure in one's life. Does that lead to happiness or not? So the Buddha's saying, hey, Basiko, come and see. What's the result of that? But it does all hinge on that sense of realization into the uncertain nature of all phenomena, that realization of impermanence. That's what the Dhamma eye opens. So in the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the first discourse of the Buddha, where Kondanya, the wanderer, Kondanya, the ascetic, Kondanya becomes Anya Kondanya because he becomes the first stream enterer disciple of the Buddha. And really what he realizes is all that arises ceases. It's a very simple realization, but it's the deeper realization of impermanence, where it's impermanence in the moment. It's arising and ceasing are of the same nature. They are the same thing. So it's a very deep realization into impermanence, inconstancy, and uncertainty. And there's a whole bunch of implications to that, in that the mind would automatically let go. Once that realization takes place, the mind can't hold on anymore. the mind might still have a little bit of holding on. There's a, for the stream enterer, there's going to be a residual holding on, but it's going to be way more letting go than before. Way, way more letting go than before, because the mind will, it'll be like the hand coming out of the fire. We won't be able to put the hand back in the fire. It's or very hard to will ourselves to put our hand willfully into a fire once we know that the hand is out of the fire and there's coolness and comfort and healing taking place. Then it'll be very hard to go back into the fire after that. So this is the Tudong of life. And each day, as each day passes, really, you know, there's going to be worries and anxieties. I've got my own worries and anxieties about the upcoming Lungpur Liem visit, just wanting it to go well and so on. But then we don't even know. We don't even know yet. They don't have, their visas aren't finals yet and everything. So we don't really know what's going to happen. It's completely uncertain at this point. But there is, say, we have worries and anxieties about the future, wanting things to go a certain way, wanting things to go well. But then those great beings that are planning to visit here, these are the things they're teaching us, is there's nothing to worry about. There's nothing to fear. There's nothing worth clinging to. And practicing in that way is going to be for our benefit. There's no loss in this. There's no detriment in this. It's only for our benefit. So I think that's, I'll leave that for a few reflections this Saturday evening.